Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
We're waiting at the present time for Congressman Steve Scalise, the House Republican whip. He will be joining us soon. And on two subjects. One that is very important to this area, and that is the long-term authorization of the National Flood Insurance Program. And, you know, we have been involved in supplemental appropriations and continuing resolutions to keep this going. And he has talked extensively about trying to get this on a more long-term funding basis and get this issue resolved. And secondly, whether Democrats are out of step with the American people. And joining us on the line is Congressman Steve Scalise. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, Noel. Great to be back.
How's everything going? I know you've been really busy up there. I've seen you on TV a lot lately.
Well, it's been busy. A lot is happening up here, and, you know, as you've been following, some good things are happening and some bad things are happening. And so there's a lot of battles, and, you know, we've just got a lot of things we've got to get done.
So, Steve, I guess we'll take up the National Flood Insurance Program reauthorization first as that starts to move through Congress. Your thoughts?
Well, it's a real important that we get a long-term renewal of the flood insurance program. You know, for the last couple of years, it's been struggling where, you know, we couldn't get an agreement in Congress. We had passed a bill last year to do a five-year reauthorization through the House, and it never made it through the Senate. So we had to do some more short terms. And look, for families, especially in states like Louisiana, you know, with we see especially in South Louisiana, so many people are on the flood insurance program. It's vital. It's an important program all around the country. And so, you know, we want to get a bipartisan agreement. And if, in fact, we're trying to build another bipartisan agreement to get this renewed for a long term. And so yesterday we had a hearing. You know, Maxine Waters is the chair of the Financial Services Committee. And she and I, I'll acknowledge we don't agree on a lot of things, but we do agree on this. And she wants to work with me to get the program renewed for an extended period of time. And hopefully we can get something not only through the House, but also through the Senate and have President Trump sign it.
Steve, I watched your testimony before that committee, and you talked extensively about how many states have actually been affected by water vis-a-vis rain and having rain events. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, people in all 50 states have flood insurance policy programs. So, you know, some people try to project it as just a program that matters to people along coastal areas. And, you know, of course, if you look at coastal areas, it involves most parts of our state, of our country. But there are states like Oklahoma, Kentucky, that have had multiple major rain events just in the last few years where they relied on the flood insurance program. So it's something that touches every community in the country. And I found that when I've been building a national coalition, members of Congress from all around the country, we've had groups like GNO Inc. who have helped us build a national coalition of support groups. So groups like the National Realtors Association, the National Bankers Association are part of our coalition because they know, look, you can't close on a house in most areas in the country if you don't have flood insurance. And I'd love to see a private marketplace where you can go and buy it from Geico or, you know, pick your company, Allstate, but that doesn't exist right now. And so the National Flood Insurance Program is the only place you can go, and it needs to work properly. You know, let's make it work better for ratepayers and for taxpayers, and there's a way to do it, and that's what I'm working on.
Steve, your crystal ball on it, will it gain in momentum and bipartisan support as it moves through the House and into the Senate?
I think it will. You know, the coalition that we've been working on is, I think, stronger even than last year. And like I said, we were able to pass a bill last year out of the House, and it didn't go through the Senate. I've been working with other senators. In fact, you know, Senator Cassidy has been leading the charge in the Senate, but I've been working with not only Republican but also Democrat senators, and they're interested in getting this renewed as well. So, you know, this is one of those areas where we can come together, and I think we'll come together, people on both sides of the aisle, to get this this issue resolved.
And speaking of Democrats and speaking of friction, you were talking the other day that Democrats are out of step with the American people. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, there are big areas of disagreement, Noel, and we've been seeing it on full display in the House just these last few weeks since Nancy Pelosi took the gavel not much longer than 2 months ago. they've been moving in a very aggressive socialist direction. And look, you know, there used to be fights between moderate and liberal Democrats up here. Well, now you don't have many moderate Democrats. You have a fight between liberal and socialist Democrats, and there's a difference. And look, I mean, they're talking openly about socialist policies. They've already had bills on the House floor that they passed under Speaker Pelosi the last 2 months to go after the First Amendment rights and the Second Amendment rights of people. They went after gun rights a few weeks ago. You looked at last week, they had a bill to have a federal takeover of the election system. And each state runs its own elections. Louisiana does a great job of running fair elections. And look, everybody that's eligible to vote ought to be able to have a right to vote. But only one time you should be able to vote. There are laws in Louisiana, for example, that prevent people from voting multiple times in different parishes. The bill that they passed undermines those voter protection laws that our Secretary of State Kyle Ardoin, for example, has. In many states like Louisiana, felons are not eligible to vote. And yet in this bill, they overrode state laws and said felons can vote. You look at somebody who was a child molester. In Louisiana, that child molester might be prohibited from going into a school, yet now they get a hall pass in this bill because they're able to vote as a felon in many cases in schools. That's what they did. We tried to have a provision to block illegals, people that are here illegally, from getting on voter rolls. In, you know, states like California, you can be here illegally and still get a state ID. And now under that bill, that person's name would automatically be sent to the voter roll files in those states. And then illegals could be able to vote. We had an amendment to prevent that, and they defeated the amendment. Those aren't moderate versus conservative issues. Those are socialist issues. You know, that's the concern I've got is, you know, the Green New Deal literally ends fossil fuels, and you can't fly on airplanes in 10 years, and they act like everybody's going to be traveling in high-speed rail. You know, good luck going to Europe or Hawaii or anywhere else in this country if you don't have airplanes. I mean, that's the kind of policies that I think we ought to highlight. People ought to know. I mean, you kind of laugh at some of them because they seem ridiculous, but they believe in this stuff. And so that's the battle we're having right now, the broader battle.
Steve, can you stay with me for a few more minutes through the break?
Yeah, sure.
I want to ask you about how frustrating is it now that everything is a moral issue as well. And Governor Gavin Newsom in California overrides the will of the people of the state of California and decides that on the death penalty issue, morally, he can't deal with it, so therefore, it's gone. We'll be right back after the break. Steve Scalise joins us, House Republican Minority Whip. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL. We're back with Congressman Steve Scalise, House Republican Minority Whip. Steve, it seems to me that a lot of the policy decisions that are put forth by the Democrats, anything that's has an adverse impact on their constituency, all of a sudden happens to become an immoral act. We look at the wall, it's immoral. Governor Newsom in California just yesterday says that I cannot sign off on executing hundreds and hundreds of human beings, and he refers to the death penalty as being immoral as well, contrary to the will of the public in California. It seems that the Democrats are oftentimes criticizing Republicans for taking these kind of actions, but yet when they do it, it's the morally superior and morally right thing to do, and therefore it's all justified.
Yeah, Newell, you know, I think the Democrats in leadership in Washington and people like Gavin Newsom are even to the left of most Democrats. You know, look at Louisiana, you know, and even California. My gosh, when you're more liberal than the people of California on something like the death penalty, interesting how Gavin Newsom has a problem with executing somebody who's a murderer, but he's okay with a baby who's born alive being murdered. We're trying to stop that procedure, by the way. Right now in a number of states, New York was one that they signed a bill into law recently, and they celebrated it, where if a baby is born alive, you can still murder the baby. I can't comprehend how that's legal, but it is in a number of states. I'm co-sponsoring a bill to make that illegal nationwide. So Gavin Newsom will oppose that bill, but he's okay with letting somebody who's a murderer off the hook against the will of his own people. And by the way, Democrats in Louisiana, by and large, are pro-life, and especially even people who are pro-choice. this shouldn't even be a pro-life versus pro-choice issue. Even people who are pro-choice would say, mostly would say, if a baby's born alive, you shouldn't be able to murder it. And so this is where Nancy Pelosi, I think, is so far to the left of even a lot of Democrats in the country, where they're moving towards a socialist agenda. And on the wall, she calls the wall immoral. Now think about this, Newell. Securing our border, if you poll that, most Americans, like 80% of Americans, support the idea that we should have secure borders. We should have an immigration system that works. We let a million people into our country every single year, by the way. We're the most generous nation in the world. But we also have laws, and we ought to respect those laws just like we should ask anyone else to respect the laws. And to say that putting up a wall like you would put up a fence around your house, to say that's immoral, you choose who you let in your house. You know, you let people in that are invited, and you don't let bad people in. The same token applies to our country. We let millions of people in, whether they're visitors, students, or people who come from another country to become an American citizen. But if somebody's a murderer, somebody's a drug dealer, and they want to come into our country, we should be able to stop them from coming in. And right now we can't. We know every single day drugs pour into our country illegally. Murderers come into our country. Right now, on average, 10 known or suspected terrorists try to enter America. And we have abilities in some cases to stop them, but we have porous borders where we can't stop them. That's what this is about. That's not immoral, by the way, to say we ought to be able to secure the people of this country and have a secure border.
And on this, while we're on this moral plane, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tried to take to task Wells Fargo Bank CEO the other day in providing financing to companies that are involved in oil pipeline business, whether or not they're involved in private prisons, and trying to say that they should be held accountable for the acts of these companies. There are so many degrees of separation that are there. When I watch this going on, I'm screaming at the top of my lungs saying, where are we going next? And is there supposed to be a moral review of every company and what they're doing? Obviously, they're being regulated by any number of agencies within the federal government. In fact, some of these services the federal government has actually procured in and of themselves. And now all of a sudden we're trying to put this on a moral plane that maybe they should have some accountability for actually financing companies and working capital. That's not how the system works.
No, it's ludicrous. It's offensive. I watched that hearing, by the way, and saw her ask the question. It turns out what she was accusing the Wells Fargo representative of, they didn't even do. But the idea that if somebody gives you a loan, that they should be responsible for what happens. I mean, if they give you a loan to buy a house and then you go and hurt somebody in that house, is it the loan officer's responsibility? That's nuts.
Well, under the AOC line of thinking, obviously so.
Yeah, what they want to do is intimidate and bully people because they don't like fossil fuels, so they don't want anybody building pipelines. The irony is, do they, by the way, cool their house and use electricity to run their air condition in the summer? Do they actually use electricity, natural gas or coal, whatever the process might be, nuclear power, to heat their home and, you know, when it's negative 20 degrees in the winter? Of course they do. In fact, Ocasio-Cortez, you mentioned her, she's got this Green New Deal where she says we shouldn't have airplanes in 10 years. And I saw just the other day they were interviewing her at the airport where she had just landed from flying on a plane. And she says it's immoral to do it, yet she does it. So it's hypocrisy. It's not just their crazy ideas, and I do think they're radical ideas. I think it's important that people watch this and see it, because it's not just some fourth grader in class asking a question or, you know, maybe making some ridiculous statement. She's now a voting member of Congress, and she believes this. Now, she says it, but she doesn't practice it. You know, so she'll tell you, you shouldn't be able to use electricity to cool your home when it's 90 degrees outside in Louisiana with humidity, but she'll be using electricity to cool her home, and she'll be flying around on a plane while she's telling you, you shouldn't fly on a plane. That's hypocrisy, and she displays it, and others up here that are saying this kind of crazy stuff don't practice what they preach, but they want you to change your lifestyle. And by the way, it would wreck America's economy. You can't manufacture things in America right now without fossil fuels. mean, mostly, luckily, with natural gas, by the way, we are reducing carbon emissions. America's leading the way on reducing carbon emissions, if that's what your big issue is. If you kill that manufacturing in America and you ship those jobs to China or you ship those jobs to Brazil, they use much more carbon. They emit much more carbon to do the same thing. So not only do you kill our economy, but you actually undermine the very thing you're talking about. And so I think we ought to have this debate. We ought to expose what they're for and fight it, because it would kill America's economy.
Steve, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to talk about the issues that are important to you up in Congress, and we really appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot, Newell. Great being with you.
All righty. That's Steve Scalise, Congressman, House Republican Minority Whip. We want to hear from you, 260-1870, text 870-870. Talk about whether or not Democrats are out of touch with America. We'll be right back after the break. This is Newell on WWL. That's right. We want to hear from you, 260-1870 or text 870-870. Do you believe the Democrats are out of step with the American people? On the Blue Runner Gumbo opinion poll, 87% of the respondents say yes. Let's go to line one, talk to Nick in New Orleans. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Good afternoon. I think that's a good morning, rather. I think that's a ridiculous question, because it seems to me it's answered by the fact that the House just elected a Democrat majority, or rather the Americans just elected a Democrat majority for the House of Representatives.
So yeah, but Nick, let's stop right there. 41 seats flipped, 41 out of a total of 435, and you know there was a very tight balance between Democrats and Republicans in the House.
Right, 41 seats flipped, taken away from the Republicans. So right. How can one suggest that the Democrats are out of step with America?
And the Republicans gained three states for Republican senators.
That's right. Three seats. Right.
Three states. Not three districts. Three states.
Three senators.
Yeah. But they represent states, not districts.
Right. Two for each state. Three seats. Exactly. You know, it just seems to me you throw out red meat.
Well, I don't know about red meat. Let me ask you this. Do you think that since the 2018 election that they – it just in the short period of time that they've been in office, that there's been an agenda by the far left that most people did not realize was going to be pushed out there, and that there's a little bit of disarray within the Democratic Party today?
There should be disarray. There should be debate. There should be a lot of discussion of the issues. No one should walk in step all the time. And that goes for the Republicans as well. There should be differing opinions, both moderate, liberal, and conservative in both parties. You know, Representative Scalise said one of the things I just thought was the most ridiculous statement. We don't have conservative Democrats. We don't have moderate Democrats. We only have liberal and socialist Democrats. That is crazy. That's not reality. You know, you're taking this wonderful show that used to be called the think tank, and now I call it the toilet tank.
Well, that's one man's opinion. I mean, I try to present both sides of all the issues, and it seems to me that there's been a move to the hard left here recently, and they're the ones that are consuming all of the news cycles. And who's to blame for that? I'm not sure, other than the fact that they're constantly out there releasing information, most of which, once fact-checked, none of it pans out very well. And there seems to be a lot of disarray within the Democratic Party. In fact, Ilhan Omar, they're looking at trying to find another candidate already to run against her, and she's only been in office probably less than 8 weeks.
That's one person. And the
well, that's one of the that's one of the 41
that she criticized Israel.
Well, that's not all. That's not all she's done. That's not all.
As she said, I made a mistake. My words were taken as anti-Semitic. I didn't mean it that way.
And then a week later, she embraced the same statement yet again.
OK, okay, that's one person.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is that that's what's driving this. You know, and you look at what's going on in California, for example.
Wait a minute. Omar is driving what?
I said that what I just talked about as an example is what's driving this issue as to whether or not Democrats are out of touch with a lot with mainstream America as to what they think about any number of these issues. When you talk about the new Green Deal, there's hardly a singular major economist in this country that embraces anything that AOC has to say. Now you
Let me finish my point.
You had 100 Democrats that embrace this as aspirational goals. I'm not against having aspirations, but we need to have aspirations that we're able to translate into our country operationally, weave it so that and see whether or not we can afford it. But don't start calling people immoral because they don't embrace the same aspirations that you have because they want to drill down and look at the old adage, the devil's in the details. And that's what's happening now is that if you are against what they're talking about, it is immoral. Gavin Newsom runs for governor of the state of California, knowing damn well that he's going to have to sign execution orders.
He doesn't. He has the power not to.
No. He can grant a reprieve if there's a procedural problem.
Well, that's absolutely false.
No, it's not false.
You're a lawyer, and you know
I am
it is.
A lawyer.
The governor
he can
has absolute. The governor has absolute power to commute a sentence and or to reprieve a sentence.
That's correct. But he didn't. He did not commute a sentence. And what he did is he
didn't.
But what I'm saying is he's reprieved. He's reprieved 737 death row inmates. En banc, I mean, just a mass reprieve without looking at each individual case to see whether or not there was a procedural deficiency in there, totally abusing his authority and overriding the will of the people that 3 years ago voted in favor of the death penalty and, in fact, wanted to get to the execution part of the death penalty of the sentence quicker. And now all of a sudden, because he has a moral issue with it, it is now immoral, inefficient, and everything else. But he's not thinking about the victims, nor is he thinking about his constituents
that
voted it.
Don't want the death penalty.
Nick, I got to get to a break. If you want to hold on, I'll come back to you. But I got to get to a break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Newell on WWL. We're back, and we're talking about whether or not are Democrats out of step with the American people? And Nick was just pointing out that, you know, in light of the fact that the House gained 41 seats, that's a ridiculous statement. And the point that I was just trying to make is it seems to me that in a very short period of time, the Democratic Party has moved to the far left, talking about any number of aspirational policy direction or change. We keep hearing about this existential, and every single Democrat uses that word, existential threat as it relates to climate change. I get it. I believe that there is some climate change issues, but really the existential threat is the inability to proceed in lockstep with the vast majority of industrialized nations in this country. Because what we have come to realize and what climatologists and others are saying now is that if we were to embrace every single initiative that's in the new Green Deal, it wouldn't make a hill of beans as it relates to climate change in the world. Because the impact of the United States now is de minimis to many of the collection of the remainder of the industrialized nations. Now, it's one thing to sign the Paris Climate Accords. It's another thing to hold themselves responsible for adherence to those accords, which is not happening, which created a competitive disadvantage for us in this country. It's fine to stay on the high ground, but at what cost? And whether or not the other countries are in fact going to self-police themselves, whereby there's going to be a difference. It is not simply that the U.S. achieves it and then it's all going to happen, and the downstream implications are going to reach the aspirational goals that are out there. In fact, in the short term, it creates more of a production imbalance, a trade imbalance, a job production imbalance, which are all incredibly detrimental to our economy. But once again, we put this on the moral versus immoral plane, and it's not that simple. And when we are talking about Gavin Newsom, when we think about whether or not, and he went on to say, we would have one execution every day for 2 years because they have 737 death row inmates. One a week for the next 14 years would be executed. Well, it seems to me like you have a bunch of murderous scumbag thugs in California. And the criminal justice system successfully prosecuted same. Victims came to court, testified whether or not, you know, what their feelings were. Others came to court in the sentencing portion of this, those that are opposed to the death penalty. But you have some of the most horrendous murderers in the history of the United States on death row in California. Just one, Lonnie David Franklin Jr., 66 years old, referred to as the grim sleeper, killed 9 women and 1 teenage girl between 1985 and 2007. They believe is responsible for 25 murders. Positively identified by one of the victims who happened to live after being shot 6 times. You have the dating game killer for his 1978 appearance on the dating game, Rodney Alcala. He confessed to killing more women and he killed 5 and two were in New York, and he's confessed to killing more. He has said that he's responsible for more than 100 murders. Now, explain to me and explain to these families how this becomes immoral. And this is in light of the fact that California just voted 3 years ago to embrace the death penalty and, in fact, to speed the process along to get to the point of execution. Gavin Newsom gets elected, very liberal Democrat, and decides, I can't live with myself. I can't sign this. And worse yet, leaders have to exhibit emotional intelligence, the ability to manage one's own emotion and the emotions of others. He admits, I made an emotional decision. I cannot sign off on executing hundreds and hundreds of human beings. Then you shouldn't have run for office. That's the state law. Your AG's office is responsible for death penalty cases. They prosecuted these. They took it through the appellate process, and there's 737 waiting to be executed. You knew that when you were running. You also knew that the state had just voted to embrace the death penalty. Now, if you want to change the law, change the law. Go about getting legislation in and letting the process take place, but don't issue a blanket reprieve for 737 death row inmates and you haven't evaluated each and every case. And I dare say you did not look at the victim impact statement. Newsom says, to the victims, we owe you and we need to do more and do better, but we cannot advance a death penalty in an effort to soften the blow of what happens. I guess so say you. We'll be right back. Stay with us. 260-1870 or text 870-870. We're back. Let's go to line 3. Talk to Herman in Metairie. What say you, Herman?
Hey, Norman. How are you doing today?
Doing great.
Hey, before you went to the timeout, you touched on two subjects. First, let me say I totally agree. I'm 100% for the death penalty, without a question. As long as we can put all type of gruesome depictions and horror movies on movie theaters and coming across our TV
then I don't see a problem with the death penalty. So I just wanted to say that. Secondly, before you went to the timeout, you said you wonder if the Democrats are out of touch with the American public.
Yeah, that's a statement that Congressman Steve Scalise said, and we talked to him about that in earlier in the first hour.
Right. And you know, in like about the last 8 years or 10 years, I can actually say that statement has become more popular coming out of politicians and media, you know, commentators, that someone is out of touch or one party is out of touch with the American public. And so I'm trying to figure out, then, if a person is born in this country, becomes a Democrat or an independent or Republican, then aren't we all Americans at one point in time in our life? So then how can the Republicans be out of, how can the Democrats be out of touch with the American public if those people are actually Americans? I'm just trying to get into a philosophical.
Well, I think it's just about the line of thinking. I, for one, look, I supported John Bel Edwards. So I can cross the aisle, and I've supported other Democrats before as a Republican publicly and endorsed them because I tend to vote for the individual. I, for one, am having a real a lot more difficult time embracing where the Democratic Party's going right now. And that, so for me, that's why I can easily say I believe that a lot of the policies that they're putting forward are out of touch at the present time. We'll be right back. Thanks for calling.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.